Yeah, so I was asked, Dominic asked me to kindly speak about this stuff, this paper, which came out a few months ago, which was what I was working on with our postdoc, Eduardo Casali, Henry Maxfield, and Don Marolf from Santa Barbara. And I'll say at the outset that the motivation for us, well, for me at least, was to basically broadly understand the set of beautiful papers that Don and Henry had written last year in trying to understand baby universes and replica wormholes, et cetera, et cetera. And I've written out a rough outline of what I'm going to say. And I'll try to give you a sort of bird's eye view of the set of ideas that we tried exploring and try to argue that the discussion that we've seen in the last year or two involving space-time wormholes and baby universes and what they imply for holography, factorization problem, and quantum gravity, while they share very general features with quantum mechanical systems, they are not quantum mechanical systems. They don't follow the usual rules of quantum mechanical systems. And I'll try to exemplify what the issues are by doing the simplest dumb example of world line free theories. Okay. So that we sort of at least see what ingredients go into definitions of these kind of path integrals and what choices do we have to make to get, on the one hand, quantum field theory or familiar quantum systems, on the other hand, quantum gravitational systems which have the associated issues with baby universes and world line field theories. So that's roughly where I'm going. And I won't try to be exhaustive. We weren't exhaustive in our paper, and we haven't explored all possible choices. But at least the motivation for us was to give a set of principles that makes clear what assumptions are being made when we make these statements, and what should we be sort of cognizant of when we decide that we are sort of talking about quantum gravity versus quantum field theory. So let me start with the motivational part. As I told Dominic, just stop me anytime and ask questions. I won't monitor the chat, but just unmute yourself and interrupt me. Let's start with some big picture questions. So one thing we know is there are sort of structural similarities between quantum gravity path integrals and quantum field theory path integrals or quantum mechanical path integrals in the following sense, that there's usually a sum over topologies. So in quantum gravity, you may want to say, oh, well, you know, I have some boundaries and they are a priori disconnected. But since gravity is dynamical, you can kind of configurations where you can have these boundaries be connected through some bulk manifold, through some cobordism that builds up some complicated geometry. This could have non-trivial topology, if you like. And these kind of structures should be included in the quantum gravity path integral. Of course, you'd say the same thing if you pinch these boundaries and draw these in terms of Feynman diagrams of point particles. Pinch these tubes and draw them into the point particles. I've drawn two-dimensional topologies or one-dimensional topologies just for simplicity. You can imagine this more complicated scenarios. And of course, this has led to various statements going back to seminal works of Coleman, Giddings and Strominger, and Hawking and Lyons and so on in the early 90s, that in some sense, you should think of quantum gravity in these Euclidean wormholes as some kind of third quantization where you create and destroy universes. Now, I'm going to try to avoid these kind of terminologies because it's not quite clear what's meant by them. And again, these terminologies are loaded, so let's try to just try to come up with some language that is useful to disambiguate various statements one is trying to make. And associated with this kind of, if we sort of play this game with quantum gravitational path integrals, then we'll end up with issues like factorization problem that we don't seem to fully understand. And to that, let me say, we can imagine that these boundaries are asymptotically, say, Euclidean boundaries where some quantum field theories live in ADS-CFT sense. And these could be connected through some bulk asymptotically locally negatively curved manifold. And you might say, okay, now a priori, these would have been three disconnected, three decoupled CFTs. They were sort of living in their own happy space. But once they're connected through some bulk geometry, we'd have to find observables that naturally mix them, and then the path integrals of the individual CFTs don't factorize. So this is a problem that is intimately now tied with the resolution that we have of the black hole information problem, because the black hole information problem and the island prescription requires us to allow in the Euclidean path integral of quantum gravity such configurations. But such configurations then lead to deeper questions about what do we mean by holography and factorization. So that's one set of questions. And then this leads to non-local correlations across theories, not just across operators in the same theory. And one answer that was given a long time ago, and one that I will discuss in some detail, is that it leads to this super selection sectors or alpha vacua. And maybe the easiest way to say what the quantum gravity path integral does is to say that the quantum gravity path integral gives you an abelian algebra of superselected observables. And I'll review this in the modern language of Marolf and Maxfield, just to set the stage in a moment. But this is not quantum field theory. That's manifestly clear. There's no abelian algebra of superselected observables in a general quantum field theory. Quantum operators don't necessarily have an abelian algebra there. We have a non-abelian operator algebra. So you see the tension immediately that while superficially, the diagrams one draws in quantum gravity look like diagrams one would draw in Bernstein in quantum field theory, or you can think of this as some kind of string worksheet diagram. It's not giving you the answers that you expect. It's telling you something yet different. So what is it that one is doing that gives you these different interpretations of the same naive looking path integral? And to do that, what we're going to do is we're going to analyze the rules for building Hilbert spaces and operator algebras from path integrals. And I'll just be very explicit. I'll try to make explicit the basic ingredients. And I'll try to be clear about what assumptions and choices we make. And we'll see very at least in these baby examples that I'm going to discuss, is that one set of assumptions will lead us to the quantum gravity type structures with baby universes and wormholes and super selected sectors. And the other set of choices lead us to much more conventional story in terms of quantum filters. And again, as I presaged, we'll just focus on 1D world line theories. If you like, Schwinger parameterized quantum field theories. And we'll view them as world line quantum gravity and try to understand what this means in two different senses. And I will just simply work with the Gaussian limit where I can do free weak contractions. So no interactions, my world lines won't split and join. Okay, so that's where we're going. Maybe at this point already I can pause to see if people have some pressing questions. If not, I'll try to get to the...
Just a clarification question. I mean, a precision, I think you said it. So for instance, string theory could be viewed as a 2D quantum gravity theory, but you're saying from your perspective, it is not. That
is correct. So
I will say to explain in what sense it is not.
I will explain at least hopefully to your satisfaction at the level of the world line theory. I don't know the full answer in the world sheet sense for string theory. I think the rules that one uses to make string theory and construct the string Hilbert space are slightly different from what one would use to build a baby universe like quantum gravity Hilbert space in this sense.
But it's not known.
At least I don't know of the set of statements that I would make at this point. So I was going to postpone that whole discussion to the very end and say that's one of the open questions I would like to think about. But you'll see very clearly in the world line picture where there is the ingredients are a bit clearer, that there is a difference. I will say that there is a discussion in the context of strings, which is more similar to which was due to, I think, Hawking and Lyons in the early 90s, which is very similar to what I would say is a discussion in terms of building quantum field theory from the world line. It's not quantum gravity.
Okay, and maybe it's going to come up in your discussion, because usually the argument is unitarity, right? So usually the rules, you know, you demand unitarity and that fixes the rule for joining and splitting.
So the rules for cutting and gluing, but I think is more than that. It's a question of, you see, there are no super selection sectors in the string theory.
No.
The question is why not? Mm-hmm. So my answer to your question roughly is that string theory is a particular, certainly is a diffeomorphism invariant theory on the world sheet, and you are gauging the world sheet gravity. However, the Hilbert space you build out of that needs more pieces of data, which I will make very explicit in the world line theory. And those choices you make makes the string Hilbert space very different from what you would want to call a baby universe quantum gravitational Hilbert space, because the string Hilbert space is really like a quantum field theory Hilbert space. The string field theory Hilbert space obeys all the rules of a standard quantum field theory. Okay, so let's go back. And maybe I'll just say in words what kind of choices, just to sort of anchor you folks in the beginning. The kind of choices we will make are about domains of integration. So for example, in the world line theory, there's a proper time integral one has to do. And we can choose the proper time integral to be over the positive reals or over the entire reals. And that gives you different answers. We can make choices on what class of boundary conditions we allow when we are putting boundaries to these world lines or world sheets. Okay. They give you different answers depending on what we do. But the key ingredient is going to be some notion of CPT conjugation, some differentiation in the Hilbert space between bras and kets. How do you go from bras to kets, and how do you distinguish ket boundary conditions from bra boundary conditions? And we need to spell these out, because if you don't spell these out, you will see that each of these we will conflate two different things, and it's hard to disambiguate what is quantum field theory from quantum gravity. Okay, so let's talk about the baby universe Hilbert space and see, just to see what super selection sectors are and why we have an abelian algebra. So if this is familiar to people, just stop me and we can move on. so usually when you think of a path integral, we think of it as computing amplitudes. And you can best think of the path integral as saying, you know, it's a rule that gives you a map from a set of boundary conditions to amplitudes. It computes numbers, but the numbers depend on boundary conditions. And you can think of the boundary conditions, you can superpose boundary conditions. So you can think of a priori the boundary conditions as having the structure of a vector space. We'll do something more with them in a second. But the computation itself requires us to tell us prescribed dynamics. So it's not just enough to say what the boundary conditions are. So boundary conditions plus dynamics, you know, what weight you assign to configurations is necessary for computing the path integral. If you've computed the amplitudes, if you have the path integral, then you can cut open the path integral and try to define state space. You can try to define a Hilbert space by cutting through path integral. So we can think of path integrals. And here I'm being reasonably general as a map from boundary conditions to amplitudes. And we cut this open to reveal gets and runs. And in some sense, if you think of, say, in scattering language, you want to think of in-state and out-states. And so you'd roughly want to think, when you think of computing amplitudes, you want to think of some set of boundary conditions as being initial conditions, so you think of them as gets, and some set of boundary conditions as the future boundary conditions, the brass. So we also want some way of distinguishing these the boundary conditions into ket and brass, and we also want to be able to split open amplitude to reveal these two pieces. So that's naturally done if you have some adjoint action, some kind of CPT map, which I'll just use as the proxy for what this is, so to sort of conjugate gets to brass so that we have the structure for nice complex vector space. Now let's imagine we have a set of boundaries, and since I'm going to just draw pictures in 1D, so let's imagine I have a set of boundaries B1, which are just points. And I'll take as an assumption that the quantum gravity path integral instructs us to sum over all topologies with given boundary conditions. So given a set of boundary conditions, I could just say, find all ways to build manifolds of whatever dimension you're going to build. In this case, one dimensional manifolds, that's all I'm going to build with zero dimensional boundaries, which connect up these boundary conditions. We build a network, if you like, a graph. And since you're instructed to sum over all manifolds that you can build with these boundary conditions, the particularities of ordering these boundary conditions shouldn't matter in the path integral. So in some sense, the answer for the amplitude, since the amplitude gets contributions from all ways of joining these boundaries through bulk manifolds, the amplitude you compute with these boundary conditions, let's call it some gadget B1 to B6. This amplitude, this observable, should be completely symmetric under exchanges. So you have full SN symmetry because you're free to sort of glue these things as you like, and that's what geometry will dictate. But you see, once you say this, the vector space of boundary conditions already has devolved into an Abelian algebra where the product is just disjoint union of boundaries. Okay, but this is a corollary of assuming that we are going to sum over all topologies. And all of those contribute in the path integral. Furthermore, if I have these boundaries, I can partition them. And I can partition them by declaring that one subset of them, let's say these guys, are future, whereas these guys are past. And I can call these my Brau boundary conditions and just get boundary conditions. That's a choice I get to make a priori. And then therefore, I should have state space. I should think of it. And then if I now cut open the path integral, so if I have some manifold that connects these guys, let's say this guy, this simple disconnected manifold, and if I come in and cut this path integral between the Braus and the Ketz, so I've computed some amplitude, I'm cutting it open, I've exposed this network, three leads coming up and three leads going down, then I should be thinking of this as an overlap between a Ket prescribed by B1, B2, B3, and a Bra prescribed by B4, B5, B6. So there should be states. We can think of states indexed by boundary condition. And moreover, we can add new boundaries. So we should be able to sort of, we'll call this state space the baby universe state space. Okay. And we'll try to diagonalize the baby universe state space in a second. And to diagonalize that baby universe state space, we'll use the fact that we can have boundary creation operators B, which act on this state, and just append one more boundary condition to it. And note again that by assumption, ordering doesn't matter. So you can just permute these guys as you like. Since ordering doesn't matter, if I act with two different boundary creation operators, the order in which I act with them doesn't matter. So the boundary creation operators commute. So this is the basic Abelian structure. The boundary creation operators just form a commutative algebra. And then this is not good enough. This is just a state space. We haven't defined the inner product on the state space. And we need to do two things. We need to check that we can have a sensible notion of CPT conjugation to convert gets into brass so that we can sort of take in a product. And we have to make sure that that particular inner product is positive definite, or at least positive semi-definite. And we might have null states which you have to deal with. So first of all, because I have boundary creation operators, I can think of all states being created from the no boundary state. Which we'll just call the Hartle-Hawking state. It's a slightly loaded word, but let's go with the terminology that is common. So you just imagine you have these boundary creation operators, you can hit them on this Hartle-Hawking state and then create a state with 10 boundaries. Okay. And likewise, you can have a conjugation operation, which we'll discuss in some detail in due course. But assuming there's a antilinear CPT type conjugation operation, then we can sort of define a joint operator's B dagger and just think of the bracket inner product in terms of this Hartle-Hawking state with daggers on these guys and no daggers on those guys. And we will evaluate this by saying that this gadget is basically my original amplitude with n plus m boundaries, m of them declared to be future boundaries and n of them declared to be past boundaries. And some were all topologies with that piece of data. Okay, so I've not told you what the dynamics is, but irrespective, given that dynamics, this calculation can be done. Good. So, two things have to go on. One, as I said, is that we have to make sure this inner product is positive semi-definite. And it may be that there are null states, in which case you have to quotient by those null states. And they will in general be null states. And we have to check that if there are null states, then we should make sure that the action of these boundary creation operators preserves a null state space. Okay. Otherwise, it's meaningless. We're not questioning the right thing. So that you can show. I won't go through that exercise. You can show that the B actually, after quotienting, does preserve the space of null states. So it's okay. Moreover, we said B is commute. But that only makes sense if we can simultaneously, and we have to check that they can be simultaneously diagonalized in this Hilbert space after throwing away the null states. So you have to check that the B's preserve null states. And check the simultaneous diagonalization. And this one is true because bees, they're not Hermitian, but they're normal. You see, bee daggers, the way I define them, they create bras. But the ordering here doesn't matter, so it's very clear that the bras, the bra creator commutes with the cat creator. In this list, the ordering is absolutely immaterial. So you can move things, shuffle things around. And that shuffling is equivalent to saying that BB dagger is zero. But the spectral theorem holds for normal operators. So you can diagonalize normal operators. So it's not just hermeticity, normality is sufficient. So in this case, that's good. So we can diagonalize B, and we can think of the B eigenkets as the alpha states. So we started very abstractly with some path integral, and we followed the rules of quantum mechanics, trying to build a state space, sort of by usual completion logic, and realized that we may have to throw away some states because they're null. And having done all that, we ended up with realizing that we have a fully commuting set of operators, which create boundary conditions, which are normal, so they can be diagonalized, and their eigenkets are the alpha states. But these alpha states are super selection sectors for boundary operators. Yes, Pedro.
Sorry, Mukund, can I ask? I think I'm a bit confused by something very basic. So we are doing 1D quantum gravity, right? So, but yes. Okay, gravity doesn't exist in 1D, so it's up to us. It's a game, right? So we join open universes and so on. So then if it's a game and if it's up to us what we decide to do, I mean, we can decide quantum theory is quantum gravity or not.
Correct.
Why can we then make such a big distinction between what's quantum gravity and what's quantum field theory and what's this and what's that, if in the end it's all a toy model?
Good. So actually, let me say one thing quite generally. This set of statements I made about path integrals, quantum gravity path integrals, actually didn't even, I motivated it in the 1D language, but these set of words have been said in arbitrary quantum gravity path integrals, or the Euclidean quantum gravity path integral. So there, 1D is not special. I will specialize to 1D because of exactly what you said. That game we understand, and we should be able to understand what the distinctions are. In building these kind of Hilbert spaces, which are weird from our quantum mechanical intuition point of view, versus more familiar quantum field theory Hilbert spaces, which don't have all these super selection sectors and baby universes. Now, you may be right. We just don't know what the rules are in higher dimensions, but we should ask the question in a familiar context, can we at least disambiguate what makes these kind of things stick versus what makes a familiar quantum field theory notion stick? Okay, and if we at least know that, we can ask whether in higher dimensions, it makes sense to talk about these things.
Let me understand if I got one of the main points right. So would you interpret any world line formulation of quantum field theory as a one-dimensional quantum gravity or no? Some quantum field theories would be and some would not be. Phi cube. If I do phi cube and I do world line, is this quantum gravity or not?
Yes and no. It's quantum gravity. So when we say those words, I want to say that you can say those words more precisely by telling me what rules you're applied for building the Hilbert space. It's quantum gravity in the sense that I can introduce a lapse function on the world line and integrate over all lapse doing nothing.
Yeah.
So nothing happens on the, it just swing a proper time with flat measure. Absolutely nothing happened. So this is also related to Laurent's question earlier that in 2D, we do gauge diffuse in the world sheet. Is it quantum gravity? I would have said so until a few months ago. You know, I would have said it's a well-defined theory of quantum gravity. It's one theory we know how to solve. But I'm going to say now that yes, but the rules we are going to add to it to make it look like what we know are slightly different from another set of rules one may give, which may one may like or not like. But if you follow those rules, they'll give you these kind of alpha states. But they're different rules.
So what's an alpha state in Phi Cube?
It doesn't exist because we've made different choices. See,
what's an alpha state? What's the physics of an alpha state? I think I missed this main important point.
Yeah, so the physics of alpha states is that the alpha states are eigenstates of boundary creation operators. And I will come back to Phi Cube theory in a second. Let me set up some machinery for that and then come back and tell you why those states don't exist in Phi Cube theory. If you take Phi Cube theory...
Can you just say a few more words? So you said it's an eigenstate of a boundary operator.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's almost a physical meaning indeed. But so it's a coherent state. Is it like a deep brain? It's like saying I make a coherent state of boom, boom, boom. I put points everywhere. Boom, boom, boom.
Yes, it's like putting points everywhere. So in second quantized language, it would be like saying, you know, sum over all field configurations with some prescribed field value somewhere. But let me come to it. You'll see in a second when I do it when I make the distinction very cleanly in that context. But this is really the crux of the question. What you're asking is really the distinction between what has been the set of statements that have been made in the context of baby universes versus what we would have naturally done a la Schwinger and said, you know, this is quantum field theory. And we want to disambiguate those two things exactly. Good. So indeed, let's do what Pedro was asking. So let's try to set up the world line. Let me call it gravity. There's only one piece of data after, if you like, summing over one-dimensional topologies. So sum over one-dimensional world lines. Is basically integrating over proper time. So there's not just the length of an interval, the world line, which we have to integrate over, and the measure is flat. And I'll assume that this quantum gravity part where I'm computing these amplitudes, these overlaps between boundary objects, this is just given by weak contraction. So just three world lines as I drew them. Okay, so and each of these big contractions comes with one amplitude between two pairs of boundary conditions. And so let's talk about what this amplitude is. There's a weight factor for every pairing, and I'll just tell you what the weight factor is. The weight factor I'll take to be I'm agnostic right now about the range of the proper time integral. You'll see why. With some boundary conditions, I'm going to integrate some matter degrees of freedom, which I'm labeling by X. Okay. So what have I done? I have assumed that I have two boundary conditions, B1 and B2. I have a word line of length, proper length T. Maybe I don't want to draw an arrow just yet, so let me not do that. And there's some, these boundary conditions are further labeled. There's some quantum mechanical system living on this word line. So in the language of phi cube theory, there'll be the phi itself. And, or we can think of this being a sigma model. You can think of this as a sigma model with some target. And I'm agnostic here about whether this is a minus sign or an I, so whether I'm doing Euclidean or Lorentzian target. I'm agnostic about the range of the proper time integral. And I haven't told you how I'm converting these between, distinguishing between these two by CPT. Just at least three things I have to tell you. Okay, there might be more things I have to tell you, but these are three things I have to tell you. Okay. So to finish the problem, I claim this is what we would naturally write on Pedro. As Pedro was asking, this is the kind of thing we would just write down. But this is not specification yet, because usually we make some implicit assumptions based on our intuition of what all the following statements, what the following specifications are. So we would need to say something about word line signature. By this, I mean, I'm just using theta, this is either I minus one. You could say something more complicated, but let's not do that. The domain of integration. I need to actually tell you what the matter action is. And what boundary conditions I allow for matter. And a daggering operation. So we have to give this much data to get started. Usually we know what we're talking about, so we don't spell out all these things. But let me just convince you for a second that even by working, I think for given my time constraints, I'll just spell this out by showing you that even if I take Euclidean signature matrix, Euclidean signature, so eta is minus one, by suitably choosing allowed boundary conditions and suitably choosing domain of T integration, I can concoct for you something that doesn't look anything like quantum field theory. And I'll just then show you something that looks like quantum field theory. So let's just assume S matter to be some kind of sigma model. Let's just take some proper time integral. You can add a potential if you like, but let's just take this. And then in this case, I'll take so let's make two choices. So I'll show you choice one. Which would be what I will call Euclidean statistical systems. Choice two the Euclidean QFTs. And here you'll have abelian algebras. And here no such thing. So we just I'll take my matter amplitudes. To be prescribed by some kind of Malta Hamiltonian propagated for some time between two points on the target. So X and Y label for the sigma model. So it's as if you start at some point, some field value, and go to some field value, and you propagate by the matter Hamilton. And we'll take the proper time to belong to the positive reals. And then the amplitude to go from one set of boundary conditions to another, I'll just take to be the resolvent matrix element, which is some Euclidean Green's function for between X and Y. Because this functional integral will simply collapse to give you the tau integral will just give you 1 over H. And I'll take my boundary conditions to be time symmetric. I'll just not, we'll use unoriented world lines. And then it's very clear what this is computing. So let me say the answer and then spell out if it's not clear. See, I have a target space with some metric, which you can think of as giving me a classical, a Euclidean Hamiltonian, positive definite Hamiltonian, which is the Laplacian's, the Nabla squared plus potential on the manifold. And you can think of various points on the manifold, and you can think of functionals of points on the manifold. Those are your Euclidean operators. And you can just compute these endpoint functions with various boundary conditions where I start and end at different boundary points, different points on the target along different world line segments, as simply some normalization times in natural second quantized language, the functional integral over the target space field phi of field operators inserted at x1 to xn correlated with the statistical measure, which is the just the standard positive definite Hamiltonian on the space on the geometry. This gives you a definitely positive inner product. And there are no null states in this problem. Because this is StatMech done a la world line. Are there baby universes? Yes, because we can just declare that the dagger acts trivially. So that's already part of this statement, x dagger equals x. And we can think of single universe state x and convert it to superposition thereof by just convolving with some test function on the manifold. And you can build up such states, and you can check that the inner product between such states, if I call the state F, you can check that there's another state GF. The inner product is just given by the covariance matrix of this. Probability distribution set by I. So it's just reinterpreting StatMech in the language of so probability distribution of super selection sectors is simply the probability distribution defined a classical statistical filter. And this is not new. I think this was implicit in some old works by Szymanczyk, it's implicit in some old works by Nelson, and so on and so forth. So various people have thought about this kind of statements in the dim distant past. But this is not what we do when we do quantum field theory. This is fine. This is totally fine. This is a construction you can give for this path integral, but this is not quantum field theory. So if you want something like quantum field theory, we can do the following. The key difference we're going to do, and this is related to the issue Pedro was having, we will split the target space into future and past. We'll decide that field configurations in one half of the target would correspond to grass, and field operators in another part of this target will correspond to kids. The easiest way to do this, so let me draw a picture and then show you what's going on. So if I have some lumpy target, I want to be C2 symmetric, so lumpy targets need to be C2 symmetric. I identify a moment of reflection symmetry and use an involution to define conjugation. This is M target minus, this is M target plus. And what I want to say is the bras live in here and the kets live here. So when I define boundary condition X, it means that X belongs to M target minus, and when I define kets, Y belongs to M target plus. And if you say this, you see, if we have this non-trivial conjugation, first of all, these operators, the conjugation operator has positive and negative eigenvalues. Previously, I took the conjugation operator to be dummy, just didn't do anything. So I had free permutation, but now I'm distinguishing boundary conditions by conjugation. I'm saying there's a difference between cats and bras. So I know how to sort together inner products. And we can think of the easy case is to think of M target as Euclidean time times some space. And this is basically some Euclidean Cauchy slice, which is the moment of time reflection symmetry. And then we can talk about reflection positive amplitudes. We can do various statements, but that, I've already made a distinction between what I said before. And because the CPT involution has one negative eigenvalue, this immediately in the length, if I try to compute the kind of amplitudes I was computing, which I would have computed for being blind to the permutations, I will not get positive definite inner product. So that's the problem. So if we call this involution something sigma, sigma has plus minus one eigenvalues. So baby universe inner product is not. Is not positive semi-definite. But that's okay. I'm not trying to construct baby universes here. I'm trying to construct quantum field theory. I can solve that problem by saying I only consider overlaps where kits are in the past and bras are in the future. And that will give me the usual reflection positive quantum field theory amplitudes. So you see, we would define our amplitudes as follows. You would say that our amplitudes between future set of states, let's say y1 to y4, x1 to x4, is simply same kind of second quantized answer, but now you think of phi the X's don't get touched by sigma, but the Y's get pushed into the future. So, or rather, in other words, the inner product here in this field configuration language is functionally integral with a convolution. Now there's a star because this is. This we can check, gives us the usual statements of quantum field theory. And now we can also go ahead and check that there aren't any null states because, except in a special case, the only set of null states that exist are states that exist on the moment of time symmetry. Because those boundary conditions are invariant under time reflection. But that's okay because that's really the only Hilbert space there is. A Hilbert space is maybe this is a better way to answer your question, Pedro, that the Hilbert space here is on a time slice in quantum field theory. In my previous discussion, the Hilbert space allowed me to be wherever I wanted. That's not the rules of quantum field theory. Okay. So these two choices, you can check, give you two different answers. This is more familiar from the point of view of doing regular Euclidean field theory. This is a bit more familiar if you're just doing classical star make. The story in Lorentz signature is a bit more tricky and follows similar principles. But if, for example, if you make the target Lorentz, if you make the world line Lorentzian, so instead of doing e to the minus ht, as the evolution operator, you do e to the minus iht, then the natural choice that gives you something like baby universes is to integrate over the entire real line for the proper time. But then you see e to the iht collapses to delta function. It gives you an honest delta function on the space of energies, which is not, again, quantum field theory. The quantum field theory path into a Schwinger parameter only runs over the positive reals. And there's an I epsilon prescription needed there to give you the usual Feynman-Green's function in that context. Okay. Dominic, how much longer can I go on for?
Let's see. I mean, I guess if you could wrap up in within the next like 5 to 10 minutes, yeah. And then I'm sure like people will stick around longer if you have something more to like add on.
No, I mean I think I've conveyed the basic message that interpreting these path integrals requires us to give us some rules. So I don't want to write formulas for the Lorentzian case. They're in the paper. You guys can see them. But I do want to go back here and say that we need to be very careful already here when we write these formulas and say, if I want to answer a question like what was asked, what is such and such quantum gravity or not, my current reaction would be, I will answer it provided you tell me what rules you've used to build that theory. Path integral is fine, but converting and constructing a Hilbert space from the path integral comes equipped with a set of choices. And all I want you to take away is once we specify, there appear to be, and they're very clear in this example, there appear to be more than one choice one can make. And they don't give the same structure. There is our conventional quantum field theory, which makes a set of choices, which we may well like, and we may well say, yes, this is the right choice, this is a natural choice. But games people play with baby universes require a different set of choices. Whether those set of choices, in the context I've discussed them in the world line theory with Gaussian models, there's no problem making those choices. This is just a regular, at least in the example I showed you, this is just a regular statistical system, classical statistical system. We can't complain about it. I am agnostic whether those set of choices are allowed when gravity is dynamical. So circling back to Laurent's question from the beginning, I don't know in 2D string theory, whether the set of choices that leads to baby universes is meaningful. My answer right now would be, I know we can make a set of choices that is standard string theory, which obeys the rules of quantum field theory in the string Hilbert space is quantum field theory like? It's not baby universe like. Should there be another set of rules? Maybe, maybe not. I just don't know the answer to this. So I don't want to say anything at this point, which is uninformative. However, if there is such a set of rules, I would be a bit more optimistic that we should be able to push things further in higher dimensions. Real litmus test for us is, should, and this I think many people have complained about over the years, this is not new, the Euclidean quantum gravity path integral does miracles. But the Euclidean quantum gravity path integral is a mysterious object. We don't know what its rules are, but yet we like the miracles. I think it behooves us to understand why it does what it does. Let me stop there.
All right, that was a very, very nice ending of the talk. So thanks a lot. Yeah, I'm sure there are questions. So I would just encourage people who have questions to unmute themselves and ask.
Yeah, hi, Mokun, I have a question. So I guess I'm confused with the, I mean, there's a usual connection that the sum over world sheet amplitudes where you integrate over the modulized space of Riemann surfaces.
Yeah.
Is exactly the way that you build string field theory, which yes. definitely has a well-defined Hilbert space, blah, 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 blah. So
yes.
What I mean, and there are the cutting rules and unitarity and all of those things. So you're talking about from the point of view of the world sheet, you're talking about the world sheet Hilbert space, not the target space Hilbert space.
Yes, Yama, I understand. I think what I'm trying to say is that we understand those rules, and those are the rules we use for, as you're saying, for computation in string field theory. And I'm just making the point that that's a regular quantum field theory Hilbert space with non-commutative operator algebra of string field operators. It's not the algebra of baby universe super selection sectors. So if I want to say, I can say it this way. If you think of string, world sheet string theory and string field theory, as a two-dimensional quantum gravity theory, there's a set of rules we understand very well. And these set of rules are the set of rules that are like choice two here. I'm just saying, I don't know, and maybe there isn't a set of choices that's like choice one here. Would you agree?
I guess, yeah. But there is choice two.
There is choice two. Choice two clearly exists, right? Because we know it exists. Yeah, I mean.
No, I thought at some point you were trying to make a stronger statement that choice two would not exist in the two-dimensional.
No, sorry. If I said that, I really misspoke. I really meant that choice one may not exist in two dimensions and choice one may not exist in higher dimensions. Okay. Yes, sorry. My apologies, yes.
Yeah, I have a remark and then a question. So thank you for this talk. So, I mean, what we presented, it's true, it's been a debate for a very, very long time in quantum gravity, right? If you go back to the field theory, as you're saying, you know, in usual field theory, there's a choice of propagator. You choose the Hadamard propagator, which is the Unschel, or the Feynman. And in fact, and that's, I mean, part of the core of the argument is that, right? And there's no theoretical, really, I mean, in field theory, we choose one, but you know, I don't think there's any deep reason for why. Okay, so usually, let's say, so my question is about, so in quantum gravity has been the same, raging the debate, whether when we quantize gravity, we should be on shell of the Hamiltonian constraints. And one choice, you know, somehow stays on shell of whatever is the generator of diffeomorphism, and the other one somehow creates anomalies or contact terms or, you know, like, okay. So, in the usual field theory case, you resort to the fact that the target space, causality in target space, right? That's how, of course, if you go in quantum gravity, there's no such thing because now it's causality in some superspace, et cetera. So is there some new insight or debate about how you resolve that choice? I mean, this is a long-standing debate of or discussion, let's say, for why the Feynman propagator. Sometimes, what is the deep reason of Feynman propagator, but in the context where the ambient space is not just space-time.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer to your question. So it's a very important question in this discussion. I could say one set of statements again that has been made in the literature. So you could just imagine a two-field model, quantum mechanical system two-field model. You integrate out one of the fields, and you start inducing non-local correlations because Green's functions of one of the fields, however you choose to quantize it, has non-local bi-local correlations. And at some level, this looks like sort of microscopic baby universes that correlate the other field. If you just integrate around one of them, it looks like this. And usually, if you make the right propagator choices, if you make some I epsilon prescriptions, causality tells you how to disambiguate what's going on. But if you don't make those choices, if you don't have any a priori reason, I don't know what to say. And this seems to be the issue when you talk about superspace discussion. So one of our motivations here was also to think of some of these models, these statistical mechanical models or the corresponding Lorentzian models, as mini superspace quantization of cosmologies, if you like. Mm-hmm. Bianchi 1 or Bianchi 9 models reduced to one dimensions with a slightly unconventional choice for Laplace integrals, but so you get a flat measure, not the measure that comes from conformal time. But I don't know if there's a universal prescription yet. Okay, and we need to decipher that question. My sense is that the answer probably depends on what one is trying to build. That at least in the one-dimensional case, it's very clear that the answer very much cares about what physics one is trying to get out. So it's an input. It's not, and that input is predicated by physical insight, not by mathematics. We have to put that input by hand.
No, that is true. It's I mean, philosophically, it's tied up with causality. So either there is something deeper, there's an extra layer of causality for quantum gravity.
Yeah.
But that debate is not, it's a theoretician debate that's been going on forever. The other option is observable. So can you somehow kind of pinpoint, right? Different. So there's a certain process possible in one version and not in the other.
Okay.
So, I don't know, is there any progress in the questions of what are the, observable that this decides what choice you will make?
Yeah, so there too, one can make the following set of statements. So if you go back to these kind of pictures from the very beginning, when we say about factorization problem, so if you think of each of these boundaries as a separate quantum system in its own right, and they're connected through gravitational wormholes, then I think it's correct that the observables of just local observables of just one boundary, they don't care about these kind of configurations. So they are sort of blind to this. But the kind of observables that get naturally pick out these things are slightly unnatural from the point of your field theory. They are sort of these kind of what people call, swap operators or things that sort of live which act on the tensor product of multiple Hilbert spaces. So Reni operators or some, or spectral form factors or what have you. And they don't live in a single Hilbert space. Are they observables? Not as you would have said in the conventional sense from a single Hilbert space point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if you need to use these kind of techniques, if you need to use these kind of objects to diagnose the presence of these things in quantum gravity, are we enlarging our class of observables, or are we saying that without enlarging we can't access this information? Another good question, which my sense is that we need some rules, and
we need some rules. I mean, maybe just a remark, and then I let somebody else. You might appreciate, because in fact, in the invention of quantum theory, the first paper that tried to put it together was this paper of Feynman and Wheeler. And the first paper they wrote was the first option, right? So Feynman's ideas was that every process, it should be an unshared process, and that physics should be real. Yeah. And so he was going for the first option. And then, so if you read this original paper is really interesting because they tried to understand quantum theory from a fundamental perspective, and then they got the wrong answer. And then that's why he invented the Feynman propagator in the second paper, but with no, he's like, there's no reason for that one, right? This one is not the, so anyway. I know when we taught the history, we teach it the other way around.
But, yes.
But these papers are very interesting because we see the invention of theory. There was this confusion.
Do you think Anthony has a question?
Yeah, it's separate from this discussion, but I might as well just ask it. I was just wondering, because it seemed like, the two options you presented, one of them you had like the baby universe sector was like this abelian algebra, and then the QFT sector, the algebra was just like whatever. It seemed like it was just the algebra of quantum field theory. So it's like just a more general algebra. I was wondering if there's like kind of an in-between, like the most simple example would be it's not commutative, but it's like super commutative, for example. Do you know what that would mean if you just did different statistics on your baby universes, but didn't go all the way to the quantum field theory answer?
That's an excellent question, Anthony. So we point out various things we are not exploring in the paper. So one thing I predicated by saying that we have full SN symmetry on the space of boundary conditions. So it's almost like, you know, it's building a bosonic Fock space, not really. And you can ask if you try to build some other statistics.
Yeah.
Big statistics. I think they're great questions. I think they're really worth exploring whether there are other options.
Okay.
We decided to take the sort of the narrowest possible route to extract at least a set of statements that cleanly distinguish choices that we need to make.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the paper in various parts, we talk about various potential generalizations that one can do. You know, you could add various additional structures and say various things. I think they're all very much worth exploring. I don't think we've not done them, and we've not done them yet. So, but
okay.
So, you know, someone wants to explore them, we'd be very happy to see what comes out of it.
Okay, but and you said in some sense the abelian thing is somehow natural from this sum over topologies perspective somewhere. So
yeah,
it's supposed to show up as a consequence.
This is supposed to show up. This is not. I mean, this is the argument that I think goes back a while, but it was very clearly spelled out in the Marolf-Maxfield papers. So okay. I highly recommend them for clarity on that issue. I mean, we review it, but I think they said it very nicely.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Cool, and I guess Namrata has a question?
Yes, sorry, this I just have like two quick questions. The first one is just, I wanted to confirm something. So, choice two, you say that the boundary conditions are invariant under time?
No, I say that the in choice two, you think of time reflection as let's take the target to be a simple product of time Euclidean time times some space, and past boundary conditions are for t less than zero, and future boundary conditions are for t greater than zero, and the invariance is at only at the surface t equals zero, which is really whether.
Oh, okay. Sorry, yeah, I didn't hear that, I guess. And then, so would the Hilbert space be would I call it like a fixed Hilbert space if we're talking about choice two in 1D?
It would be a fixed Hilbert space of configurations on the moment of time reflection symmetry. Think of Cauchy slices. The Hilbert space is defined on Cauchy slices in that sense. It just lives on a co-dimension one surface from the target point of view.
The second question was also like, so you say that you've picked the most, you know, simplest way to like, you know, show this distinction. So staying in the simplest way, like let's say choice one, what other information can we get for the amplitude? Like, do we get more information about the amplitude between the two boundary conditions in terms of, I don't know, I mean, this would probably be complicated if we looked at complexity in a way. If we're actually look, I don't know. Now that I mentioned then that it seems like it won't exist in higher dimensions. If you're looking at complexity, that means you're looking at, you know, an amplitude between the two boundary conditions in across multiple dimensions, right?
Okay, so. I guess there you would want to ask, within the state space you've built, once you give me some set of operations that I can declare to be simple, you may want to ask, how do I move from some state to another state? You know, and that would be your measure. I think that question can be asked once we've diagonalized the maybe your universe Hilbert space. But the thing is that the alpha states are just super selection sectors. You can't, once you're in a certain super selection sector, you're stuck there till you build one more, something else.
Okay. Right, so is there a way to like, you know, build this more to get more, so just like you said, like in order to learn more about the A, that we've defined, would either have to add new conditions, like, okay. Yeah. So this is all we can get from choice one for now.
That's right. I mean, I didn't make very specific what in what I'm using to build the amplitude A. I just took it to be a sigma model. You could take it to be something else and you'd get different A's, but my statements are agnostic to the particularities of the amplitude itself.
Right.
The construction is blind to that. That's an ingredient you need to supply. But once you even supplied that, I can construct various things from it.
Right. Thank you. This is very helpful when you're starting out. You know, yeah, thanks.
Great.
Well, let me also ask maybe sort of the basic question. So, like, assume I want to build a quantum field theory of universe. So I guess in 2D, that would be something like string theory. So, I mean, what would be like the crucial ingredient here, right? Because like in your Euclidean QFT, you need this point of time reflection symmetry, which I don't really seem to have if I'm like in the space of universes. So I guess there's like some bipartition going on of like your future or past states.
Yeah. But that you can already implicitly do even without having a time orientation, right? Because you could just declare that there's a some Z2 choice, which is what you want to call CPT.
Right.
It just needs to be antilinear operation. So
yeah, so I guess from this perspective, I mean, what distinguishes then the baby universe theories or like the quantum gravity theories from the QFT theories? The fact that for quantum gravity theories, the CPT is usually trivial or almost trivial, or
no. I don't know. In this model, it is trivial. It doesn't do anything. X. I took X dagger to be X.
Yeah.
In this case, but don't think one needs to do that in general. At least I don't know the general rule for it. But what I am saying is that if you seem to follow your nose and think of the sum of our topologies giving you baby universes, then you land on your feet on this abelian algebra.
Yeah.
That the B is commutative to B daggers. And, right. and the B is commutative to every other B's. That's the crucial distinction between quantum field theory. And that's a key feature of quantum gravity that is not in quantum field theory.
Right. Yeah, okay. I guess my question, but I guess you've also answered this, is sort of like, yeah, is there, from sort of like the slides you've shown last, is there any sort of like sufficient condition you could put on choices, the choices you have to make to sort of guarantee that you end up with
one and not the other?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like one. I don't have one for you just yet.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.